As war clouds gathered in the Pacific in 1940, World War II was of course already well underway in Europe, and that summer the US Navy had ordered the first of the Essex-class carriers. But with things clearly spiralling rapidly, in addition to the first three vessels, which had been ordered in July, another eight were ordered in September, and the programme began to expand out of Newport News Shipyard to eventually include a total of five major shipyards. However, the order for four of the eight new ships, including CV-14, went to Newport News. But unfortunately, this exceeded the yard's simultaneous build capacity for large ships, and so although it was the sixth hull ordered, CV-14 would have to wait until February 1943 to actually be laid down, immediately after the slipway in question was cleared by the launch of USS Yorktown CV-10, making CV-14 the 12th Essex-class to be laid down. Originally, she was named Hancock, but a drive by an insurance company of the same name led to a name swap with CV-19, which was closer to said insurance company, and so CV-14 became Ticonderoga partway through construction. Her name adhered to the slightly confused naming policy of US Navy carriers at this stage, which could broadly be described as taking names from the American War of Independence, although where those names came from was mixed between notable figures, notable ships, and notable battles from that time period, a system which would actually itself begin to break down still further later on into the construction run. But in this particular case, it meant that the ship bore the name of the battle or capture of Fort Ticonderoga in 1775, which was one of the earliest engagements in said War of Independence. Due to the delay in starting construction, the ship wasn't actually launched until February 1944, albeit that having spent just fractionally over a year on the stocks, that was a fairly remarkable feat in and of itself. She commissioned in May of the same year and represented a slight change to the Essex-class design, with a somewhat longer bow which allowed anti-aircraft guns to be installed right up front, a feature that was shared by all but one of the following members of the class. After the appropriate trials and shakedown crews, Ticonderoga headed for the Pacific, loading up with her air group and ammunition and reaching Pearl Harbor in September, making her first frontline deployment in November of 1944. Initially, she appeared to be a very lucky ship, as over the course of several operations, she helped to shoot down a number of Japanese aircraft as both kamikazes and regular attack aircraft rained down all around her. Surviving this, and seeing at least three of her sisters badly hit by attackers that got through, plus riding out Typhoon Cobra, all with minimal damage, while her air group did a fair amount of damage to the enemy. But her luck ran out on the 21st of January 1945, when a kamikaze came screaming out of the cloud cover, smashed through her flight deck, and exploded in the hangar. Another kamikaze hit her near the island, and it was only the valiant efforts of the anti-aircraft gunners, who kept on firing while the ship burned around them, which saved Ticonderoga from worse damage as other Japanese attackers kept coming. Fortunately, the damage control crews, as well as the captain's positioning of the ship relative to the wind, brought the fires under control, which included inducing a controlled list after correcting the one that had been caused by damage, and this allowed a good amount of the burning aviation fuel in the hangar to sluice out into the sea atop a wave of used firefighting water. The ship then headed for Puget Sound for repairs via Ulithium Pearl Harbor and was cleared for action about 3 months later in late April, arriving back on the front lines in late May. Here, she struck directly at the Japanese home islands and rode out yet another typhoon, then continued strike missions and would be present in Tokyo Bay for the formal Japanese surrender. After spending almost half a year shuttling men back home, she was then placed in reserve at Bremerton for about half a decade before being sent to the Atlantic coast in 1952 for SCB-27C modernization, which allowed the operation of new heavy jet aircraft, a process which would last until late 1954. She was only active in this particular configuration for a few years, as in summer 1956 she was brought back in again, this time to receive an angled flight deck under the SCB-125 program. This work was done by spring 1957, and she headed back to the Pacific, Although she'd been inactive during the Korean War, she was in right at the start of formal American involvement in the Vietnam War, as it would be her aircraft that responded to the Gulf of Tonkin incident. After this, the mid through late 1960s were spent rotating on and off station as the Vietnam War escalated, with the ship seeing five combat tours, which lasted until 1969. Later that year, she was brought in yet again for conversion, this time to an anti-submarine carrier. This didn't take too long, and she was back on the high seas by summer 1970, still based in the Pacific, but not operating off of Vietnam anymore on account of the lack of submarines in the North Vietnamese forces roster. In between training with various Allied navies, she was also the recovery ship for the Apollo 16 and 17 moon missions, and the return of astronauts from the Skylab 2 space station. Somewhat worn out by this stage, she would be decommissioned in 1973 and sold for scrap in 1975, having acquired 17 battle stars, 3 Navy unit commendations, and 1 Meritus unit commendation over the course of her career.
That's it for this video. Thanks for watching. If you have a comment or suggestion for a ship to review, let us know in the comments below. Don't forget to comment on the pinned post for dry dock questions.